The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Profiting on the experiential trend. ECB taper? No taper. Gold hits lows, dollars near highs, and our guest, Jean Chasky, host of Her Money Podcast and the financial editor of NBC's Today Show. All this and much more on episode number 488 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Welcome aboard. This is Andrew Horowitz. You're listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast for the second week of December 2016, coming on the end of the year. And there's a lot to know about what's going on in markets and what's coming up. Of course, we've seen an incredible rally since the election, as once again, the folks that predicted that it would be an all-out bloodbath for markets were proven quite wrong. Same thing happened with Brexit. Same thing happened, it seems, with the Italian referendum. Same thing happens with things like the vote to keep governments open and all sorts of things. Got to wonder if there's a lot of fear-mongering going on these days, or if people are just downright wrong, if the experts just can't seem to get grip with the reality, if they just can't deal with change, and if change, in fact, these days seems to be actually something that is very welcomed by markets. For years, we had this situation and condition where there was a split Congress and administration. The president was, of course, Democrat, and the Congress was Republican. Nothing would go through. The Republicans were pretty much saying no to anything that went on. There was a requirement for the president to do a variety of changes that were outside the voting ability of Congress through executive action. And now we have a situation where we have a very pro-business, and it seems to be a very significant leaning towards whatever the Republicans are going to want to do is going to be done. A lot of that has to do with reducing taxes and infrastructure spending, possibly looking at trade deals, all the things we've been talking about. Whatever it may be, the truth is that markets are reacting very positively. Whether or not you believe and agree or even like the current situation, the markets seem to like it, at least where we are at this point. Now, if you recall, last week I talked about where we were in a time period which is oftentimes rather weak or weaker in terms of seasonality. And we saw that for about a week. And then all of a sudden last week, out of nowhere, maybe because we reached a couple of technical points on markets, markets bounced back very strongly. So about a 2% gain, 2.5% gain plus for the NASDAQ and the S&P and the Dow. Looks like the Dow could hit actually 20,000 by next week if we keep this pace up. And generally speaking, a lot of that has to do with the fact there's a lot of optimism about what is going on with the U.S. Dollar has been rising to a significant level, about to breach its recent highs, which shouldn't be good for many stocks that are exporting. But again, for a lot of the small caps and things that are benefiting from potential of a change in regulatory environment, making it a lot easier to deal with in the banking area, for example. The yield spreads have been very favorable. The hope that there'll be possibly a retraction or a undoing of Dodd-Frank and the small caps, which would hopefully benefit from lower taxes and less regulatory environment, and as well as a big infrastructure spend. So there's a lot of things that are actually hopeful, pending, and maybe going to be put into play over the next year or so. The question is, are the markets actually thinking about everything that is going to be put into play and not realizing that there's going to be some push and pull on this? I think the optimism has gotten pretty high. We see that from a variety of indicators, we're seeing a pretty toppy level in terms of optimism. Last week, we saw one of the highest levels of the Michigan confidence levels from consumers. And that's a good sign that things are good and that people are excited. People are happy. People go out and spend. However, are we getting a little too giddy? Are we getting to a point that maybe that some of the things that are hoped to be priced in, you know, really can't be done? It's a big question out there. Now, the ECB came out with a commentary last week that, no, they're not going to be tapering, but they're just going to take down the amount of bond purchases they do on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis, I should say, from $80 billion per month to $60 billion per month, but they're not tapering. What they're going to do is they're going to extend out the time frame for which, in fact, they will be buying this. So instead of stopping in a few months from now, they'll continue it on for another 6 months. So actually, the total amount of dollars that will be spent are actually more than would have been, but they're doing it less of amount per month. Maximum, the maximum amount they'll do per month is less. Well, the euro dropped off a cliff on that note, even though initially when the information came out that they were going to be dropping it and extending it, had the euro actually blasting higher. But Mario Draghi, in his wonderful way of describing actually what they're doing, convinced everybody that this is actually a better and a more effective way of spending the ECB's money. And in fact, it is extremely negative to the euro, which is what his expected and hoped for outcome would be when he and his crew decided to do this. And the euro dropped down. It's close to 105 right now. So the idea that euro parity with the dollar will be coming into play soon is actually something that could happen, especially because this week coming up, we have the Fed's decision on rates. And for the most part, we're at about 100% probability that the Fed will increase rates. And whether it's because the stock market's up higher, things are looking better in terms of the opportunity for the economy to grow. We saw the GDP print last week or the week before. That was pretty good. Whatever it may be, right now it looks like that the Fed is actually going to be raising rates. The question is going to be, how much are they going to continue raising rates into 2017? There's a lot of speculation around this. Will they have four that they believe that they will actually increase, possibly 0.25%, another percent higher through 2017? Or will they stay on this once per year thing? Even though last year, remember, about this time, last year in 2015, they said that they'll probably have four increases through 2016. Well, they ended up doing none. And at first, that was seen as a pretty negative situation because there was a lot of concern and question about what they were seeing that anybody else wasn't seeing, but it wasn't anything significant. They continue to flood the market with quantitative easing through the when bonds would come due and when yields would be paid, dividends would be paid, or income will be paid. They bought more bonds, so there really wasn't that much of a shakeup in that area. And when you have the euro zone, the ECB buying bonds like crazy, driving yields below zero for some time, when you see that Japan is continuing on their monetary stimulus, China is kicking it up, every country around the world is either reducing rates, nobody really besides us is increasing rates. Well, what you have to believe is there's a tremendous amount of liquidity, and that's what markets have been playing with for some time now. One of the other things that was interesting was the discussion about this repatriation trade. Remember how we talked about how a few things that they were talking about was, you know, infrastructure spending would be increased and we'd see lower taxes, but also this whole idea that much of the monies that were offshore held by companies that were United States-based companies would be brought back, and that would be used to spend on all sorts of things that would benefit the economy. Well, already several firms have said, well, if we do bring back money, I'll just let you know what we're going to do with it. We're going to buy back shares and issue higher dividends. They got to shrink their float further to make sure that they have a continuation of the higher earnings. And I think that that was, aside from all the other things that happened last week, the realization that companies will have billions of dollars in excess monies that they don't have to borrow at this point to bring back to the United States on a semi-tax holiday, if they in fact bring it back or repatriate the money back to the U.S., to simply increase share, quote-unquote, shareholder value by issuing higher dividends and more dividends and share buybacks. I think that was, wow, this gravy train isn't going to end anytime soon. Even if interest rates go up, the concern was, well, if interest rates go up, companies won't be able to borrow money as efficiently and as effectively. And therefore, the buybacks are going to slow down. And we've already seen some of that happening. But now that companies are starting to hint that if they are forced to bring back their money, they're probably not going to spend it on the on anything other than, or a majority of the money will be spent on buybacks and dividends and shareholder value incentives and initiatives. Well, hello. Happy times are here to stay. So a lot of that, you know, financial engineering and financial accounting will that is done in which to increase earnings and to show a better overall return for investors. And, you know, where the modeling that goes into it looks at earnings growth and ratios based on earnings, et cetera, will continue to ride the wave of buybacks isn't going to end anytime soon, it seems to be. Now, at the same time, we saw the dollar rising, but nobody seems to be concerned about that. If the same exact thing happened in Japan, because they're a major export country, you would see that stock market just plummeting. But the yen has been losing ground, as well as many other currencies around the world, as the dollar has continued to rise. Now, we saw a little bit of a drop last week. I think it went below 100 for a very short period of time, and that took some of the wind out of the sails of the markets. Maybe there wasn't a lot of foreign buying going on, and maybe there was a concern that there would be a turnaround of some of the the ideas that were being presented by the incoming administration. But last week, all that turned around again once there was another kick higher for the idea that there would be this repatriation and also the ECB taper, non-taper discussion. I don't know what else to say about it. But anyway, let's talk a little bit about what's going to be going on this week. We did mention that this week is a Fed week, and that's going to be happening, I believe, on... I think it's 2 o'clock on Wednesday. Yeah, that's on Wednesday. But let's go through some of the things that are happening before that. Not much going on Monday. Tuesday, we have export prices, import prices, which not a big, important, impactful economic print for the markets. We have Wednesday of a lot of things happening with retail sales out in the morning. And we have PPI, Producer Price Index, which we should be seeing that probably will be rising a bit, but again, with the dollar rising as much as it has, you got to question the cost of goods may be reduced significantly. We also have in the morning, before the market opens, industrial production, capacity utilization, business inventories. These are all important areas to see how the economy is going, particularly when it comes to retail sales. Now, we saw that we're going to see some of the effects of the holiday shopping. Just a small amount of the holiday shopping season is already going to be embedded in these numbers. And with the confidence number so high, there should be, a read-through of a better retail sales. Expectations are somewhere about, still about 0.4% increase, which would be a drop from the previous month, which was at, I believe it was at 0.8 on the retail sales number. Ex-autos, 0.5. So autos are a bit of a drag still, even though we're seeing significant amounts of orders being sent as sold. There's still a lot of spending that's being pushed onto other areas. And then the decision by the Fed and then a follow-up news conference at 2 o'clock and 2:30. Now, on Thursday, we're going to see CPI, which always follows PPI, the Consumer Price Index, or inflation, looking for a 0.2 month-over-month number, which would equate to about a 2.4% annualized number. We'll see the Philly Fed, Empire Manufacturing, and the NAHB Housing Market Index, which has been keeping pretty well. The confidence level of builders, which is there. And on Friday, we'll have housing starts and building permits. So we're starting to see some of the culmination of all this information and how it's going to play out to 2017 is going to be the next play. We'll see what the Fed says about what their outlook is going to be. I think that will be the highest moving thing. I think the Fed is still concerned about a lot of the questions about, well, yeah, markets are okay. We could raise rates a bit. We do see that bonds, for the most part, have done the raise already. We can see it's been really good for the financial sector. But at the same time, there's still a concern that maybe there's a few things out there, like some of the elections that are happening in Europe. The concern over the high dollar and the question as to whether how much of the promises in the campaign are actually going to be played out and pulled forward in terms of fiscal stimulus. So a lot of things happening next week, but I'm going to talk to you about the experiential trend that I'm going to talk about in the form of a stock after we talk with our guest today. It's a great guest. This is someone who I've been trying to get on for some time, and I think that's going to be a great discussion. So let's get right to it. And our guest today is Jean Chasky. She's the financial editor for NBC's Today Show, which is an award-winning personal financial journalist, AARP's personal finance ambassador, and host of the podcast, which you need to listen to, Her Money with Jean Chasky on iTunes. She's a best-selling author. Her recent book, which we'll talk about, is called Operation Money, a free financial guide for military service members and families, and Money Rules, the simple path for lifelong security. So how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for coming on. There's a lot of little things I want to talk to you about. We'll get to the book in a minute and kind of get into that whole discussion about why you put that out. But so I guess I wanted to start with some basic concepts and discussion about finance. And I know that you've been doing this for a while. And it seems that over the generations, things are regularly the same. In other words, there's a lot of challenges that people regularly face. What are some of the things that you've seen out there that people are constantly bucking up against when it comes to their finances?
Well, I think the biggest challenge right now is that, and it's been in process for years, is that so much of the burden for retirement and for health care has been shifted to the consumer. And that just puts a level of responsibility on everybody for taking care of themselves, particularly with retirement in their later years. And without enough financial literacy education, without people getting the message that this is something they have to do until often too late, it becomes very difficult.
Yeah, because, I mean, we used to have back in the old days, we had defined benefit plans. We had pension plans. When a pension plan, you went to work for someplace and you'd work and you make your salary over those years and you'd come out of it at whatever age it was and you'd have a lifelong income stream. Now they're like, oh, I have a better idea. Let's let people be in charge of their own futures and how have things like 401ks and obviously IRAs for supplement. But unfortunately, there's no guarantee in those, right?
Right. And this is something, I mean, this is not new, right? The 401ks were invented 25 years ago, but over time, more and more of the balance has been shifted to individuals as pensions have gone away. And yet there hasn't been enough of a focus, I think, on teaching people exactly what they need to do in order to make sure they're set up for their own futures.
Interesting. Now, I don't know if any of that's going to change, by the way. I don't think that, the other problem I think we have is not only are people not able to maybe make some of the decisions and understand about it, but the problem is we're living much too long.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned my book. I actually have a book coming out in March called Age Proof that I wrote with Dr. Michael Roizen, who's the chief wellness officer of the Cleveland Clinic. And that's what this is about. I mean, the subtitle of the book is Living Longer Without Running Out of Money or Breaking a Hip. It's a huge challenge. It's a huge challenge for people to deal with their increased longevity. It's a particular challenge for women because we outlive you guys. And it just means you need strategies. Now, I actually do see things changing a little bit. There has been a greater focus on financial wellness in corporations and finance as part of the whole wellness discussion, which is terrific. You know, people are sort of being brought along and a greater understanding of the fact that the more that we can automate some of these things for people, the more that we can automatically enroll people into retirement plans, automatically escalate the level that they're contributing, the better off everybody's going to be.
Well, let's talk about that financial wellness, and particularly sponsored by various corporations and different organizations. We're talking about education, right?
Yep. We're talking about education, but not just education. We're talking about behavior change.
And how do you, but that's a hard thing to do.
Yes, it's a very, very hard thing to do. And there are many, many players in this marketplace and a lot of different approaches to it. But it's a combination of education, incentives, cheerleaders from within the various corporations that have taken it on. I mean, nobody has a perfect solution yet, but this discussion has been going on for a decade now, and I'm heartened to see that people are trying.
I mean, I guess that leads me to believe that the corporations that really take this to the next level, or at least embrace the idea of financial wellness and as a part of the package, right, are going to be those that are really sought after.
Yeah, I think some of them are. I mean, you've seen in the past year or so, maybe 2 years, some companies even adding student loan repayment to their benefit menus or partial student loan repayment for their employees. Because they're looking at what's stressing their employees out, and they are seeing that particularly with the millennials, student loans are at the top of the list.
I'm going to tiptoe into an area here. You did a discussion on the Today Show back in July, and it was about...
Okay, you're counting on the fact that I'm going to remember that, but you give it a shot.
So the biggest mistakes that women make with money, by the way, not that I'm saying women make any mistakes at all. Let's get that clear, okay? What are some of the biggest mistakes that women in particular that you focused on make when it comes to the concept of finance and money?
I think in part putting other people's needs before their own, not negotiating for higher salaries and not knowing what our value is on the open market. And by the way, men are guilty of these things as well. But they become more important for women because of the wage gap and because women outlive men. And so we've really got to get a grip on shoring up our finances. And if we can do that at a younger age, we're better off.
So you talk about these things on the Today Show and a variety of different platforms and all. You have this podcast. Why did you start the podcast?
I started the podcast because I wanted to have longer conversations, quite frankly. I had done radio for 3 years as part of the Oprah and Friends Network, and I just missed it. And so when I was thinking about what to do next, the idea of a podcast specifically for women, a safe space where we could discuss exactly those kinds of issues with experts who are doing the research, with people who are having the experiences, was really appealing to me. And we're getting a really nice response. So I'm heartened.
Yeah, I've been doing this since probably 2008, 2007. And I can tell you it's very rewarding from a lot of standpoints because, like you said, perfect. You can have longer conversations. It's not just snippets, right? So a lot of times on financial TV or even on TV, you get this little snippet of something that is the perfect setup of the right information for, 30 seconds or a minute or even, maybe 2 minutes. But who knows what the rest of the stuff that was on the cutting room floor after that.
Right. And, I think we get a lot of information out on the Today Show. I think, we've got great graphics artists who help us and wonderful producers who help us put out a ton of information in a very short period of time. So that's not what I'm saying. But I like data. I like details. I like to dig in a little bit deeper if I have the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. But one of the things about, and I'm kind of curious about is, have you seen any kind of discussion maybe on your side inside the, the concept of the Today Show or maybe anywhere else about this whole fake news thing where, in the financial industry, I can't tell you, we've had fake news like, okay, well, yeah, we hear rumors all the time that try to do something to push up a stock or maybe even a leak of information that's untrue. This whole fake news thing, is it getting way too much press or is there something more to this?
I honestly haven't dug into it all that much, but I do agree with you in that I remember I was a reporter at Forbes. That was one of the places that I was when I was in my 20s. And at that point, there were a lot of things that were very thinly traded penny stocks. and you would hear snippets of information, as you're saying, people spreading rumors, people just trying to juice them a little bit. And what that taught me, and it taught me a long time ago, was, you know, you've got to always do your homework. You've got to make sure that you've got the second source and the third source, and that those sources are reputable. And I think that's true today. I mean, I've got kids, and my kids were taught in school, you know, Wikipedia is not a source. Wikipedia is not, right. You know, when you're writing a term paper, right. That's not an okay thing to cite. Mm-hmm. And there are many things that are not okay to cite. And just coming at this from a perspective of journalism, I think we have to be more vigilant. Check, recheck.
Well, I mean,
and make sure we got it right.
It, over the last number of years, and we'll cut it off after this, but so many times you see something like a comment of, from the source who does not want to be identified, and you just get a one person non-identifiable source versus in the old days, you had to have, before you sent the story to your editor, you had to have at least two sources that were opposing to provide some kind of a balance in all of this. Times have changed.
Well, and I think that, you know, I think there may be some instances where not having the names of the people that you're citing might be okay. They're very few and far between.
So let's kind of turn back to the current financial landscape and wrap that into the whole conversation about there is, you know, the challenges that we have today in terms of finances, and particularly for, you know, people who are planning for their future and their retirement, not someone who's just set and done and all, but the current financial landscape, we have so much news coming at us in terms of Fed, you know, the Fed around the world, or the central banks around the world.
Right.
Now we have this whole Trumponomics thing, which is, you know,
I've never heard that term.
Trumponomics? Oh.
Yeah.
Trumponomics, which is this whole theory of, oh, everything's going to be great because that's where it comes from. Oh, it's going to be the best.
Because that's what he says?
Yeah, that's what he says. Yeah. So whatever he says seems to be, okay, well, that's going to go. So we're going to have trade deals ripped up. We're going to have tariffs put on external. We're going to have an infrastructure spend that's going to be the best ever and the biggest ever. And, you know, we're not going to have any waste, of course, from governmental spending on this. It's going to get direct to the point. We're going to have tax cuts. We're going to have this and that. And the markets go bananas. And people seem to be buying into this, which it may be true. I'm not saying it's not true.
I think we don't know is the answer, right? I think we just don't know. And that's why, and I mean, the name of your podcast is The Disciplined Investor, right? And to me, discipline means you know what your asset allocation is. You know what the appropriate mix of investments are for you, is for you. You essentially stick to your knitting and you don't let the outside forces of the market make you do something stupid and irrational. Mm-hmm. And for me, I grew up working in a lot of financial magazines. And what that meant was that you were not allowed to trade individual stocks or anything that you were writing about. And so I've been a passive investor most of my life, and I stick with that. I put a lot of stock in the fact that as long as I keep putting money in over the long term and I have a charted path to where I want to go, I will eventually get there.
Yeah. It's kind of like the story of, you know, if you're going on a trip and you know you want to get to, you know, Montgomery, Alabama, and you start your car and you start driving, but you don't have a map, how do you get there?
Right. You or know, GPS.
Oh, yeah, these days,
bring
right.
Bring it into what's the a map? What's a map? Last century. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
What's a trip tick from AAA, right?
Oh my gosh. I remember so many trips in my family station wagon when I was a child with those triptychs. Yes.
Did you have the wood sided station wagon?
We did not have the Buick. We had the Ford,
all right.
Which had no wood, but it was a great station wagon nonetheless. Yeah. And we were allowed to sit in the way back because, you know, it wasn't dangerous in those days.
Yeah, no. And with no seatbelts. My dad used to take the seatbelts and cut them out of the cars.
Oh, well, my parents never did that, but yeah, no, it was great fun.
All right. That's great. Quick wrap up on this. Just quickly, your favorite topics, guests that you recently had on your podcast.
Oh boy, I had Barbara Corcoran on. She was wonderful.
Really?
Yep. I had Carl Richards from the New York Times talking about behavior and investing. There have been so many terrific ones. Way at the beginning, Gretchen Rubin on Money and Happiness, Arianna Huffington. We've had some amazing guests.
Yeah, that's awesome. Who would you like to get if you had, that person who maybe is not so available, that person I'd like to get on?
Boy.
Aside from me.
From you, of course.
Yeah.
I'd like Michelle Obama.
Oh, that would be
I'd
good.
I'd like Michelle Obama.
Yeah, I've had, it's funny because I've had a lot of guests on that are, let's say, ranking people in politics in interesting positions, the financial something department for the president. Great guy, but some other people I've had also, but it seems like the higher they get, the more official they get, the more boring they are.
Well, I would expect that Michelle Obama would not be boring.
Oh, no,
at
no.
All. I'm just saying.
I'm just saying. You're right about that. Anyway, Jean Chasky, you can listen to her on Her Money podcast with Jean Chasky on iTunes. And of course, we'll put all the links on how to get her books and all the information on how to contact her. Find out more at www.jeanchasky.com. It's a Chatzky. We'll put that link on the disciplineinvestor.com show notes for this episode. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it, Jean.
Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, that was pretty interesting, I thought. You can find out the information about her books, as I mentioned, on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. You can go right to the show notes of this episode, and there's links there. You'll also be able to find out more about her podcast. I encourage you to check out that podcast. The links are on the site. Also, it's called Her Money Podcast. You can find it on iTunes and other places around as well. All right, now. I talked about before we went to our discussion with Gene about how this whole experiential trend, and I brought this up once before, or at least once before, and I was talking about the potential for a company called Groupon to do well because this whole idea of a new way of doing things, no longer do people want to be in the background. This is not for everybody, but there's a generational issue here. They want to participate, especially the younger generation wants to participate. They don't want to just watch skydiving. They don't want to watch somebody just, doing something. They want to be a part of it. They want to be a part of their own reality show. And a lot of that has to do with the opportunity to do selfies and take pictures of themselves and show their friends. And there's all sorts of reasons why this is going on. But again, they want to be involved. That's why the companies like Blue Apron, which delivers food that you can actually cook versus just delivering a pre-made food or just getting takeout only, it's becoming much more popular. And I was thinking about this again and trying to come up with some ideas when I saw a stock that we hold, a company called Dave & Buster's, which is a restaurant and gaming type of establishment where it's not just simply, let's call it Panera Bread, where you go in, you can get your soups, you can get your sandwiches, you can be on the internet and, meet friends and all that. That's great. It's not just Starbucks where you can get a good, or in my opinion, a very bad cup of coffee, but a cup of coffee, get your breakfast again, meet some people, et cetera. It's a place to gather, et cetera. That was very popular for some time. This is one step above. Now, it's not anything dangerous. It's not a place that you would go to necessarily get total thrills. But it's a place that you can go to play games. It's a place that you can go to eat. You can drink. So in other words, beyond just the gathering of friends, gathering of people to eat, dine, drink, spend time, etc., there's also the opportunity to participate in something. It's kind of like the Chuck E. Cheese for adults. Okay? In a way. I haven't been there in a little while, but if you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. It hasn't changed that much. But there still is a lot of opportunity to do things beyond just eating and meeting and greeting and being a part of a group. There's more things that you can do. And that's how this company has seemingly seen a real surge in their profitability because now what I can see is this experiential or the experience-based trend of doing things beyond just simply sitting back, enjoying, just watching the football, just watching the TV show. You get involved. You're in it a little bit more. That's why things like these, I think they call breakout rooms or these mazes or these various experiences, whether it's things from scuba diving or trips that involve going on a trip down the river and rafting for a week and doing things that are not just sightseeing but more involved, jumping off cliffs and crazy things like that, are all very popular amongst especially the younger generation. They want to do things. They want to get hands-on. They want to get dirty. They want to be involved. Maybe even take some risks in some circumstances, physical risks in some circumstances. And this is why I really think that why all of a sudden a company that, Dave & Buster's, it was kind of like an overpriced place to play pinball or, air hockey and, very skee ball, things like that, and you can get, you have to get like 10,000 tickets to win a plastic back scratcher. Why all of a sudden is this company doing so well? And I think it's all about the experience. So I started to wonder, and I still don't have a lot of answers on this, by the way, but what other companies? And I thought about Groupon because Groupon was really advertising towards that whole experience-based, event-based type of product. And it didn't play out very well, by the way. They're not doing very well with that. No, they're not doing very well in general, Groupon. Stocks at, a multi-year low. But I wonder what other areas and what other things that we can look at that will be involved in this whole experience-based type of program that maybe will do well. Now, it's possible that a lot of these companies are not publicly traded. They could be smaller companies. But I wonder if there's going to be something that will be coming along and actually providing us an opportunity there. And that's something I'm going to be looking at and something I really encourage you to look at as a place and a way in which to possibly think about separating the various companies that maybe are in a particular sector. Because we know that, generally speaking, many of the restaurant chains have not really been doing well very well lately. They're making some numbers and they're doing okay and they're getting along, but nobody has really been popping out and saying, oh, this is, this company really is doing well. And it's not a trend across the board in terms of companies in the restaurant business as an example at all. And then all of a sudden we see this breakout and it kind of shows you something, that there's something else going on. And when we talk about the changes in shopping habits, in eating habits, in hotels and in ways that people are, where they're going, what they're doing, there is definitely a very significant change that is happening, albeit slowly, but something is changing. And in order for companies to do well, you have to wonder, well, a Rainforest Cafe, for example, that I don't even know if it's still in business. I think I've seen a couple of them in malls recently. But, that was kind of a cool thing for a while. You sit there and you see these birds chirping and you hear these noises and a fake thunderstorm comes up and shakes around and lightning strikes and rain comes up around you. All right, that's kind of an experience, but not hands-on, where you're actually doing something. And, maybe we'll see a resurgence of bowling. Who knows? But this is something that I want you to look at and something to consider as an idea for investing in the future in the area of entertainment. The whole area of entertainment. Whether it's restaurants, movie theaters, whether it's travel. Keep a watch on that. I think it's something that's going to be kind of interesting to look at. Anyway, Dave & Buster's, take a look at that stock. Pretty interesting to look at how it recently broke out. And it was up, 18% on Friday after its earnings came in and just blew the doors off of it. And their outlook was pretty good as well. Very strong mover of late. And then when their earnings came out, even stronger. Something probably I did not expect to be as significant. We just saw that the company had a very good earnings and revenue growth over the last year, 2 years, and a few years from 2 years back. We saw that their margins were doing well. Everything was playing out really well for them. And I guess what happened was that in the end, it was because things were starting to really favor them And we saw that in the fundamentals. Now, you remember something. One of the things that I look at, of course, is doing a screen. And we talked about this on, I believe it's the last show, how you could do screening for momentum. And there's ways to do that. As a matter of fact, a few listeners wrote me and told me some really interesting ways to do this on, whether it's Google Sheets and a few other ways. But, you know, I think that when you look at this concept of, you know, looking for earnings and all that, and then finding it and then verifying it with actually with the technicals, it's a pretty good way to play. Now, we had a good amount of questions coming in. We'll save that, I think, till the next show. We're going to have a good amount of listener questions. If you have any questions that you want to ask me about finance, about stocks, about mutual funds, about ETFs, about I don't know what, whatever it may be, the world economic circumstance, we will do our best to either read them on the air and answer your question or answer them directly, depending on if it's appropriate for everybody to hear, et cetera. So you can go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and you can simply click on the Ask Andrew button there. And you can go ahead and simply write in your question and we will do our best to get it on the air, et cetera. Now, a couple other things I want to mention here. First of all, DH Unplugged every Tuesday evening with John C. Dvorak. You can listen to me there. We have a great conversation. We have some great games that we play, some stock picks that we do. If you're looking for some stock picks, that's the place to listen. We have a running game between him and myself, as well as Close to the Pin and the Old Codgers versus the Millennial portfolio. And by the way, the Old Codgers finally caught up recently. And as of early last week, we're in the lead. We compare stocks of the older generation to stocks of the newer generation and see how they're doing. It's kind of interesting after the election how things turned on a dime. And all of a sudden, the Old Codgers are doing pretty well. You could also, if you're interested in finding out more information about our Arrow strategy, which is our algorithmic strategy, which has been doing quite well. It kind of started off a little slow during the beginning of the year, but now it's cranking pretty well. We go long, we go short, we're out of the market. About 92% of the time, it's in the market in one position or another, long or short. And you could look at that over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. We'll send you some information about how it, you know, what it's all about and what it does, et cetera. Also, the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, which is a stock-based strategy. It combines that and the algorithmic strategy, as well as some alpha generation. Do some hedging in there as well. Sometimes use options in the portfolio as well. Do some shorts and some quick trading. For example, last week we picked up a position twice during the week right after Donald Trump announced that, oh, we're not happy with drug prices. Well, did you see what happened with the drug companies? Made a couple of nice little profits on that, on the short side. And then, of course, our global allocations are available to you. Those are a more traditional style of investing that you know, looks at the whole world and looks at a diversified approach. That's probably best for those that are looking to diversify a portfolio appropriately along many industry sector and allocation lines and looking for a longer-term type of positioning. So you can check out all of those on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Also, I'll keep on hinting about this. It's not ready yet. It's coming. I know I keep on mentioning it, but Investology, totally new way to invest that we are putting out there very shortly. We're in the throes of it. Working on a couple things on the back end to make sure it's very tight and works really well. You'll be able to see everything online. Check out what's going on there, as well as invest directly online. So it's kind of a two-handed, we call it advisor-crafted, technology-enhanced solution to portfolio management. So you get some of the best of advisor in discussion and help with it, as well as being able to actually hands-on do it yourself. So you get, as I was saying, the experience of doing it yourself. You get that experience-based type of action with it as well. So all that's available to look at. Investology is kind of coming in the background. But we'll tell you more about that when it's available. In the meantime, thanks for listening. And hope you have a great week. We'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.